So this very special impromptu Roni's Own Radio, and I have the pleasure of having Natalie Nicole Gilbert on the line, and we're going to be talking about her experiences in the last year, what she's been working on, her new recording, and because I don't want to call it a record, but...
Well, just because there's no vinyl involved doesn't mean that you can't call it a record.
Okay, I'll call it a record then. All right, her new record and all the things that she's doing. She's a very prolific person, a very busy gal, and it's just great to have her back. Natalie, welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and just kind of talk about, you know, not even artists specifically, but what's going on in the world and what's relevant, because you really stay on top of trends, and I love to listen at times to the Roni's Own Radio and just kind of hear what you guys are discussing, too. You have a very good knack for communicating with people.
Well, I appreciate that, and we try. But now, kind of bring me up to speed, because you are a woman in transition. You're moving all the time. You're doing things. So I never really had a chance to talk to you about this, but this must have been a huge change for you, because you used to live in Louisville, right?
True, yeah. Derby City.
And you pulled up stakes and you moved here, here being near Los Angeles.
Yes.
So what was that like?
Well, the move itself was one that was really welcome. I had looked at a number of different cities, and I had also interviewed for positions just outside of Boston, and I had looked at moving to Manhattan with a friend of mine from high school, and I love New England. I love the snow. I love the rain, and some really great people up there. I think a lot of people think that just because the weather is cold that the people are too, and that's not always the case. But ultimately, I had to be in a place that that really had the temperament, the artistic temperament that I was looking to be in. And it's kind of funny, and I'm sure you may get this a lot too at parties since you live in the Orange County, but it seems that just about any party you go to in the greater Los Angeles area, you know, the questions are, what's your name, what do you do, and what brought you to L.A., because so many people are not actually from here. And I always kind of give them this not pat answer, but this constructed answer, because I've had this question thrown at me so many times and been frustrated in my trying to shape a reply that seems like it was really making sense to them, because everybody expects that you move to LA to become an actress or actor or, you know, to get famous in one way or another. And I'm always mindful of telling people very honestly, you know, that's not what I came here for. I love performing and I love connecting with an audience, but really I just wanted to be around other people who were like-minded and like-hearted and people who were my artistic peers. And it's been really refreshing to see in LA how many of those people that share the same talents also share the same mindset and the same heart. There are a lot more genuine people here than Hollywood gets credit for. I live now in West Hollywood, and you know, where Drew Barrymore just chased down some guy that we were into the other day. So you're surrounded by people of all kinds, but really it's been refreshing and unexpected and surprising to find there really are a lot of people here that are not the stuck-up people that you see on TV, and I think Hollywood is often misrepresented that way.
Now, that's a great segue, is you're a very active lady, and you jog a lot, and you had an incident in the last year. So if you could talk about that would be great.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. That I was hit while I was jogging last year, which, you know, I'm always kind of looking on the bright side, and to me, I remember that day, and I focus on the funny things, you know, because as I was in the emergency room, I was texting a friend of mine right away. You know, they don't like you to have your phones there, but nobody said anything to me. I texted a friend, can you bring me my laptop and my purse and, you know, all these things? And she's like, where are you? And I said, well, I was in a little bit of an accident. And she said, well, how's your car? And I'm like, oh, my car's fine. I wasn't actually in it at the time. And it was such a benefit, I think, that I've been around people that have a positive attitude in the midst of really dark times, because, I mean, it was scary without a doubt. I mean, as I was struck at the intersection of Melrose and Fairfax on my morning jog in a crosswalk with right of way during daylight. And when I hit the ground, I mean, one of the guys who was there and called 911 for me said, you know, I drove away that morning after you were with the ambulance and in the care of the authorities, not knowing if you were going to make it, you know. Hmm. And it was scary. We didn't know exactly what the damage was going to be like, but it was amazing, Jeff, that I walked away with such little damage from something that could have been so much worse. I was really grateful that I saw the car coming and was able to try that much harder to get out of his way. And even though I didn't quite make it, my recovery took far less than anybody expected in the way of time. I was on crutches for a couple of months. I had surgery, and I was in the hospital for just about a week or so, and only had about a month of physical therapy. So all said and done, it was about 3 months, and not a lot of people who are hit by a car while they're jogging can walk away saying that. So I'm really grateful, and I know it's certainly a great result of prayers and people that were watching out for me and took care of me following the accident, too. But, yeah, I mean, you can't go through something like that without it being life-changing, but I think sometimes people expect it to be life-changing in a way that wakes you up, or in a way that that does a 360 for you. And I don't know, maybe I'm not the only one who experienced this, but for me it wasn't like a 360. It was just it turned up the volume on what I was already doing. It wasn't that I, you know, switched my life and started doing something drastically different, but I did start to look at what I was doing and saying, you know, I have not bothered to release any of my previous work online in a really public way. I've always just kind of kept to myself because I'm an introvert and it doesn't really matter to me what kind of attention it does or doesn't get. Hmm. So I did kind of pull back and say, well, you know, who's being shortchanged there? And I realized that if I did kind of open the door a little bit more and let more people in into my artistic life as well, that I would have an opportunity maybe to represent my brother and my family better, because my mm-hmm. brother was also a singer-songwriter, mm-hmm. and, you know, just have other opportunities for those that I'm associated with, and that got me excited to be able to see some of those people have opportunities because I was pressing a little bit harder. And it's much more exciting for me to see that for them than it is for me, because I just do it for fun, you know?
Sure. And it is... We'll get to the rest of that in just a little bit. I want to ask, for me, I'm kind of hearing the people that may be listening right now wanting to ask this question, so I'm going to ask it, is why would God allow that to happen to you?
Hmm. That's an awesome question. And, you know, part of my week is spent working at a Christian radio station, and I even had one of my Christian coworkers asked me that. And he said, you know, aren't you angry at God at all? Or, you know, and I'm really not. You know, maybe some people will just kind of shake their heads for me to say that this never crossed my mind. But, I look at, you know, obviously this isn't the first tragedy in my life. And I think all of us have had at least one major tragedy in our lives that mm-hmm. really shaped who we chose to be and shaped the direction that we took or the direction we walked away from. And I continue to see that the God of the universe is so brilliant that he gave us free will. And then we're all aware of it, you know, all of us, you know, even though we know we can't hide from God, you can't slip under a bed and think that God doesn't see you there. You know, clearly he's omnipotent. He can do anything. And he can intervene. He has the ability to, but if God intervened every time something was about to go wrong, that would negate free will. It would make us robots. It would be an iRobot society where we are the robots, you know, and what value is that? You know, is it worth it for us to sometimes collide with something and to be risky, oh man, I would much rather risk being hit by a car on my morning jog and have the ability to decide what my favorite color is and whom I love and who I want in my life and what I'm going to do with my life and whether or not I want to love God and play on his team than to just have somebody else, you know, pulling my strings like I'm Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. But the end result is that if we want that free will, if that's going to be the way that it is, that means that God has to let bad stuff happen. He has to let us make stupid choices. And, you know, the driver that hit me, he didn't even make that stupid of a choice that morning. I can honestly say I have been that person making a left-hand turn, you know, a number of times, and you're so busy watching the traffic and waiting for a break in the traffic that you just push the gas pedal as soon as there's a break in traffic, and, you know, you hope and you look and you do everything you can to make sure there's not a pedestrian there. But I think any of us are capable of being distracted or thinking that the person's going to get out of our way or who knows what. You know, I don't have any animosity towards him. I know he did not wake up that morning and say, you know what, it's August 28th, 2007, and I just feel like hitting a jogger today, you know? It was not premeditated, and I'm sure that's not where his heart was, and I'm sure his life is changed as well. If there's any one thing that I am a little more reluctant about now, it's that I'm not fearful of driving, but I am that much more careful, understandably, going through any intersection, because the last thing I want is to, down the road, be the person that strikes a pedestrian.
Right.
Going back to your question, we all have the ability to choose, and in order, the price that we pay for having that ability to choose is that we and our humanity are going to sometimes choose wrong. And life doesn't always have margin and bumper cars. You know, we don't play safely, but if you're willing to play, then you can see some really amazing things happen too. It's not all tragedy all the time, and you just have to be willing to stick it out and have determination and keep living life passionately, I think.
Yes. And what I think is interesting is when difficult things happen to people, they choose to focus on that, and they don't move on. They get angry, blame. There's so many different things, and go into denial, medicate themselves, whatever. There's a lot of different things that people do. And what's really interesting about you is you are a very shy person.
Yes, I am.
And it is such an interesting two sides of you, is that you're very shy, but you have so many talents, and it must be tough for you to have all these stories and all these things in your mind and your heart, and the only way to bring most of those out is to really kind of step out of that shy shell of yours and do it. And what I've seen is from the difficulty that you had when you got hit, you were hit by a car. That's not just, well, I fell or, you know, whatever, but you
I
were,
fell and I can't get up. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You were hit by a moving vehicle, and I remember reading something that thank goodness for your training as a dancer, that you kind of, You knew how to fall right, if I remember right.
Yeah, I did my best to fall right, which was actually from my ice skating training.
Okay.
And then also when I was in recovery, I took every liberty the doctor gave me to go ahead and move what I was allowed to move. And that played a tremendous role in my healing so quickly, because as soon as he said you can't put weight on the leg, but he didn't say I couldn't lift it. And so I was very, very rigorous. And, you know, we'd sit around watching CSI and movie after movie during my recovery with the family that amazingly took care of me, though I was not their own family. They just took me in like their own daughter, because my family is 2,000 miles away. And as we were, you know, watching whatever TV show or movie, I would stand there on my crutches and just do repetition after repetition of tendu and, you know, for those of you that don't speak English or don't speak French or do ballet, it's a lot of repetitive leg exercises and and lifts, and just using every muscle I was allowed to use so that the atrophy was as minimal as possible. And then when I could put weight on my leg, I wasn't just falling flat on my face because I had kept some muscle tone, you know. And, I mean, I'm no superwoman by any stretch of the imagination, but I just tried to use my brain, you know. And even if you can't keep the full perspective and see the big picture all the time, if you can just take small steps and look at, you know, this thing will help me get where I want to go, then that one little thing that you do that's as simple as, you know, getting up a little earlier or doing, you know, a particular exercise to strengthen a muscle, whether it be literal or figurative, that's a little weak, then that can really help you make so much more progress than you would have made if you didn't bother thinking about it or didn't bother admitting that you've got a weakness, you know. If I had just sat around going, oh, well, you know, I was hit by a car and I guess I'm just not going to dance again, or I guess I'm just not going to live life as fully as I did, you know, that's not the person I want to be. That's not the person any of us want to be, you know. And I'm not going to say it's easy. You know, I was jogging, I was getting out and walking or jogging 5 days a week at the time that I was hit, and I'm not quite back to that number every week. But it is a process. You have to give yourself leeway and margin and admit, you know what, it's going to take some time, and not be too hard on yourself while still pushing forward and saying, I've got the strength to get through this. It's very internal determination that you can express outwardly, but it's got to start in your mind and your heart. Hmm. And I may have totally gotten off the question that you asked, but...
No, it's good to hear about the process, because I think so many times we hear about the end and, well, I'm better now, but what happened between, you know, when you got hit and you know, and later on down the line. So no, that's, I mean, it does take repetitive just staying at it, whatever it is.
It really does, and it's the part that people don't like, and so I think that's why they don't talk about it, or some of them are too lazy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you watch movies, and I was sharing this in one of my private vlogs and with some friends this week, and I know it might sound like a kind of funny way to verbalize it, but I'm a very visual person, and I, you know, enjoy films like anybody does.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, in most films, like if you're watching Rocky or even like, you know, Flashdance or something, you know, where somebody really has a big turnaround from start to finish, big character arc, or they really accomplish some physical thing wonderfully, there's always sort of like this music montage halfway through the film that is supposed to cover like the 3 months of their really hardcore physical training.
Mm-hmm.
And they shorten into, you know, a 2 minute span, and lots of cutting between this shot and that shot, and you know, all this work that takes place, and we all want that montage to just be 2 minutes.
Right.
We want to choose some really fun music, and we want it to be powerful, and we want it to be inspiring, but nobody likes how long that montage really takes to shoot and to take place, mm-hmm. you know? And even now, I can fully admit I'm in that montage. That's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are catching a few glimpses that they're sewing together on the film cutting floor. But it is a process, and there are parts of it that you can speed up because of your diligence, and there are parts that you can't, and you just have to face that and deal with it as it comes, and be honest with yourself and everybody else along the way. You know,
that's true. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But what I really am always kind of amazed by is your friends that circle around you, and even though your family's a ways away, your friends are always kind of there, and you know, use the internet, the evil internet, for good. And so you know, it's really neat. I remember right after, you know, the accident, I shot you an email, and I remember somebody kind of sent a bulletin back out and said, you know, she's okay, you know, she's staying with me and everything's fine, just, you know, keep praying, and you know, we'll let you know if we need you. And it was like everything was handled, you know. And that's pretty cool. So you got good friends, you can pass that along to them. So
I certainly will. They will all be glad to hear it. Yeah. And I tell you what, I wholeheartedly agree with you, 300%, perhaps, because I did know that I felt like I'd found good peers and that I was hanging out with the right people, but until you know, August 28th, I just didn't know how amazing they all were. I had people, you know, not round the clock. I mean, I still had independence, which is good because I'm an independent spirit. But,
sure.
You know, people coming over and cooking, helping me clean up the house. And, you know, even when I was coming off crutches and I couldn't walk my laundry down two stories to get to the laundromat, you know, it was, somebody was always willing to lend a hand with the simplest of things. It was just difficult. And, I mean, it's not nearly enough thanks, but I did my part to try to think of every person that visited me at the hospital or lent a hand helping me do those menial things and listed every one of them by name in the CD liners, you know, where people usually bother to say, oh, thank you for this producer and thank you for, you know, mom. And, you know, well, mom is there listed because she did visit too, of course, but, you know, where other people just list endless people that helped them artistically, I spent the bulk of my liner notes just thinking those amazing people that really did rise to the occasion and did not have to. Nobody was going to hold it against them or give them demerits if they didn't take the time away from work or, you know, spend the energy, but they did it anyway, and I will be forever grateful that they stepped in and did that, absolutely.
Well, kind of as I was alluding to before, is that a lot of people, when they face difficulties, whatever it is, they choose to internalize, hide, you know, hide in a cave and you know, be bitter and stay there. And you decided to really step out and express what was in your heart, in your mind, in your life, and this CD skeletal began to come together. So let's talk about the process. Was there a point when you said, you know what, I have some material that I need to release? Or when did that moment happen? Was there a moment like that?
There was, and it came probably, I mean, it was very late in the year after I'd probably just been off crutches for a little bit. I'd actually been spending the year working on my Best Of project and had even passed out CDs for people to vote on which songs they wanted and was completely heading down that route. I was going to have a CD that was really, really super polished and radio ready and sounded, you know, amazing in its production. And after the accident, I was looking back through my songwriting files. I have an online archive where I send everything that I write to be copyrighted and archived so I can easily search for it. Not everything, but, you know, the things that I think are relevant enough to be submitted to said archive. And, you know, just as a matter of sort of grieving everything that happened and getting my life back on track once I was back at the computer and back on my day planner and all that stuff, I was just looking at the themes of some of the songs that I had written. And it was really, the word that comes to mind is sobering, and I'm not sure that that really conveys everything that I want it to, but it was really mind-blowing to see what topics I'd been writing about just a couple of weeks before, like 10 days before the accident. One of the songs I had written was talking about how it was ready for a change in my bones, which I certainly got, let me tell you. and really, when I just looked over the top songs that I'd written through the year, the ones that were really registering with my friends, because I include them and they're sort of my interactive guinea pigs when it comes to my songwriting. The songs that had really registered with people painted such a full picture of what the year was like. You know, just some of the hopeful moments and the goofy moments and the I'm going to get back up on my feet moments. And I also lost my uncle little over a month before I was hit, and he was my favorite uncle. I just loved him to death. Such an inspiration in his life and his faith, and a wonderful author. And I had written a song about that time too. So just like putting the songs chronologically on a CD for myself and listening to them back to back, to me it felt like it was a complete timeline of that year. And the idea hit me, you know, I thought, you know, I can wait until my best songs are polished, but I think that this deserves to be a project by itself. This just this chronological accumulation of things that happened during this really difficult year. I don't even want to call it dark because I didn't let it become dark.
Right.
You know, I fought against finding as much lemonade in the lemons as possible. But really getting to see that full picture to me was inspiring, and I felt like it could be to others as well, and there were some others who enjoyed the music and would have put up with it whether it was chronological or not. So, and ironically, too, I had already, I had been posting things on MySpace, just rough drafts, because I hate just putting up polished things. I like people to be able to hear things that are a little more raw and in process. And some of those songs that I was posting, rather than, you know, at MySpace it says, you know, what year is this from and what album is it from? And in the album box, I had been typing in skeletal in parentheses just as a poetic means of saying, this song isn't done yet. This is just the bones. There's no muscle. There's no skin. This isn't fully produced. It's just me and a piano, or it's just me goofing off, and, you know, don't take this too seriously. And when I was in the doctor's office and he showed me my x-ray after I had been healing up, I saw how kind of funny it looked. And it was a JPEG. And I said, can you email that to me? And I thought, that's a CD cover right there.
Wow.
And between the title and the graphic image, it just seemed like the perfect idea to just call it Skeletal. And, you know, and I hope that people, as they listen, they don't take it too seriously, like, oh, you know what, the production on this part sucks, the microphone's a little too hot, or the vocal's a little bit, whatever. You know, it's not intended for radio airplay. I work in radio. I hear myself on the air all the time, and I don't really need that. But I think, especially in this iPod and indie music generation that we really have going on right now, that people can appreciate stuff that's in its raw form, and there's an emotion that's caught in those rough drafts that's very difficult to recreate.
Right.
So it seemed to me like it was a valid project on its own, with very little retouching from me.
I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I do want to touch on this really quick, and we'll come right back. Is the whole internet, web, digital music, trading out to getting out to people? Do you think the internet has been good for you or bad, as far as a musical person getting their music out? Do you feel the internet has been a benefit or a detriment to you?
For me as an introvert, especially as an introverted artist, it's been ideal. I don't think the internet could serve me any better, because what I do in the privacy of my home studio, which is, you know, just a glorified way of saying in the corner of my bedroom, is something that I can just, you know, hang on a little coat hanger on the World Wide Web, thinking that it's not going to reach, you know, not even thinking that it won't reach that many people, but just, you know, knowing that whoever can stumble upon it, but not drawing an outrageous amount of attention to it. And then over the course of time, finding 24,000 people stop by that page. You know, it's kind of crazy. But there's also this really beautiful serendipity in it that the poet in me loves. And it's that, you know, and I mean, I know, you know, my roommate and I have these discussions sometimes about why I don't necessarily want to be a signed artist. And she's like, but there's serendipity in distribution too. Your music could be reaching, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions. And that is true. But there's something really awesome about people kind of archaeologically digging on the internet and stumbling upon you, rather than just, you know, you being highlighted on iTunes or, you know, featured in any other number of ways. You know, like even the people behind the film Once, you know, they were just creating a film to further their music. And it wasn't, they did submit it to Sundance, but they were rejected. And then somebody ended up seeing the film and resubmitted it to Sundance and accepted it into Sundance. And it became this huge explosion. And even though it did end up getting this wide distribution deal, it was still so strongly founded on serendipity. And I just, you know, it's one of my favorite occurrences that people just stumble on things. And I think, in a way, it can mean more to them that way. You know, like if you, and I'm not saying anything against or for arranged marriages, but if you, you know, are just put in a room with somebody and told, oh, you should get to know this person, this could be a potential mate for you, it's not nearly as interesting as when you're in some public place, you know, you're at Barnes & Noble or Starbucks or wherever, and this person just gains the courage to walk over to your table and say hello because something about your behavior or your presentation drew them to you, you know? And I think the internet is like that, and it gives artists so many different ways to put their music out there to people that it just would not get through the conventional means. There's a fan of mine in Singapore that I play Scrabulous with who's become a fan of my music, and you know, people in Thailand that are downloading a particular song of mine over and over again, and I don't even know why. I have no idea why. But it's interesting to see those trends that happen just because it's out there, right, and it's available to them in a free way or in a sort of hidden and treasure-like way where they can go looking for the Easter eggs, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, and another question I had, talking about fans finding you, is what's been the most wildest story you've heard about how someone found you and your music?
The wildest story about how someone has found my music. That's a really great question. Music-wise, I think the greatest phenomenon for me has been the Thailand downloads. There's a song that I did covering an old TV theme of Beauty and the Beast, not the right, the animation thing, but the thing with Linda Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it's just out there for free on one of my sites that has like 150 pieces of audio people could download. So it's highly, highly buried.
Hmm.
And I don't know if they've rejuvenated the show over there or why it is a popular song, but I've seen that track be downloaded so much that they've actually, it was an interesting problem that I ran into, and it's a flattering problem, I guess, but it's to me, it's more of a problem than it is flattery. But apparently, so many people in whatever part of Thailand were downloading this track and looking for it that my name started getting inserted in sites that were infecting people with viruses.
Oh, okay.
So I was getting, my name was being used in the tags for those sites to lure people there. And, you know, John Cosper, our good friend and one of my writing buddies, mm-hmm, was like, well, it says something that they think that you're popular enough in searches that your name being in the tags can help them infect people's computers. And I'm like, well, I guess, but, you know, at the same time, my name is being used to infect people's computers. So it was interesting to me that any of that could transpire just because, you know, obviously somebody stumbled upon the track and said something to a friend, and I saw, you know, hundreds of downloads from that area and didn't know what to blame it on. So to me, that was one of the weirdest things, because to this day, I still really don't know why it's so popular or anything about it. And apparently I'm, you know, decently known there, but
yeah, you have to go over there and see
so.
What happens.
And now I'm going to have to tour in Thailand.
Hey, that's not a bad problem.
No, not at all.
What percentage of men are fans of your music? And why do you think? We're going to stop our great interview with Natalie Nicole Gilbert right there. But never fear, we're going to pick it up next time on Roni's Own Radio. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com. We also would love to hear from you. So if you want to send us an email, it is Roni's Own, that's RoneyZone at gmail.com. We'd appreciate to hear from you. Maybe you've never heard of Natalie, maybe you have, and you already know what a great performer, writer, person she is. Drop us a note, and we'll for sure pass it on to her. And we'd love to hear from you. So until next time, this is Jeff Roney, the host of Roney's Own Radio, saying see you later. And be sure to drop by next time to hear the rest of this great interview. Talk to you soon. See you. Bye.